right, Birmingham, you want?
Yeah. Hello, welcome to an episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, where the three of us on this show are more than a little stressed. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Chris.
All right, there.
And he's Phil.
Yes, I am Phil.
He certainly is. Now,
high level of concentration.
Yeah, Phil is super concentrating at the moment because we are driving a car. Well, it doesn't like the bends at reasonable speed. We are driving a car at pace from North Wales to New Haven on the south coast of England. Now, we thought we left in plenty of time, but due to a small administrative error where one member of the party, who will remain unnamed for the moment, managed to not pack his passport in his bag, so we had to rush back another 60 miles from where we were on the English border back to Conwy to retrieve the passport, which we now have. So we are very, very, very behind schedule, but making reasonable progress. And Phil, who's never driven the car that we're in before, is doing a very good job. And the car that we're in is an Ineos Grenadier. Yep, you know the Grenadier. It's a vehicle that is somewhere in between the G-Wagon and the Land Rover, right? It's got elements of both of those when you look at it, but it's a completely new independent vehicle. I'm sure you know the story of the Grenadier. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who owns Ineos, Britain's biggest chemical company, possibly, I don't know, a few years ago wanted to buy a Land Rover. He couldn't. They'd stopped building the old Defender. So he asked Land Rover if he could buy the tooling and the rights and start building the old Land Rover under a new name. And Land Rover, of course, said no. So Jim Ratcliffe, being a billionaire, said, all right, I'll do it myself. And he did. He got a bunch of engineers together. He bought a factory in Hambach on the French-German border. It's the old Smart factory. And they started building the car there. The car was engineered by many of the same people who'd just engineered the latest G-Wagon, or G-Class as it's called now. So it's got a bit of DNA from the G-Wagon and a bit of DNA from the Land Rover, because it set out to do everything that the Land Rover did. Some people call it a Land Rover copy. I think that's unfair. I think it's just a development of the Land Rover. Now, my mate Phil, who's hurrying this vehicle around at the moment, Phil, I won't trouble you for long because I know you're concentrating driving, but you've driven many a Land Rover. You own two Land Rovers. What's this like in comparison initially?
I'd say on the road it's nicer, although we're probably not getting very many miles to the gallon at the moment. And also probably better off-road than a standard long wheelbase Land Rover, because this comes with locking front and rear axles. I think if the Land Rover's fitted with lockers on the front and the rear, I think the Land Rover would see this off. It's nice, comfy to drive. Suspension, when it's loaded, it's a little bit wallowy in the bends. Really, the suspension is for road comfort, I think. The long wheelbase load carrying Land Rovers normally come with twin coil springs on the back, which really stiffens them up. Other than that, I've got no complaints. It's a nice, comfy driving position, a good level of equipment. Certainly got plenty of go in it.
It's got a BMW 3.0-litre 6 diesel engine that produces 250 brake horsepower, I think, isn't it?
I would say something like that, yeah.
Not sure what the torque is, probably close to 350. I'll have to look that up in the spec. Chris, you comfy in the back? We got a lot of gear. You comfy?
The back is brilliant. Lots of space, nice seats, good view. Yeah,
More space than we had last year in our Isuzu D-Max, but that was because we had four of us and loads of kit. This year we've only got three and loads of kit, but when I organised this car from the Ineos press fleet, they said, would you like any accessories? Yeah, okay, what have you got? I said, well, you can have an awning. Evenings and mornings, I like awnings. When you're camping, an awning could be useful, so we had that thrown on the side, a full-length awning down one side of the vehicle, and we had the roof rack fitted, which, as it turns out, we did not need at all. Now, we've got...
We've got another one in front of us now.
It's all right, Phil. He'll move out of the way in due course. Relax. There you go. See, he's heard me. He's out of the way. We are in a hurry. I don't think anyone else is today. The surprise was that we managed to fit everything in, and we've got tents for five people, so that's a two-man tent and a three-man tent, both a reasonable size. We brought a table, we brought cooking food, we brought three camping chairs, we've got three beds, we've got
three medium-sized rucksacks,
yeah,
lots of small sort of baggy sized things, a massive box full of cooking stuff, umbrellas, flagpoles, God, kitchen sink.
Literally.
Lovely toy.
Hey, where's that?
Fondue set.
Cool boxes.
Two cool boxes.
Yeah.
Two cool boxes. And we didn't have to put anything, not one item, including the 4.5 metre by 4.5 metre event shelter, which I was pretty certain was going to go on the roof, but it hasn't. And I'm very impressed at how voluminous this vehicle is. The last two vehicles I think I've ever been camping, and we haven't had to put something on the roof, apart from pickups, were the G-Wagon that I had a few years ago, the previous generation, and that Chrysler Voyager that I had, which was incredibly commodious. Big up the MPV, by the way. The MPV is coming back. Remember where you heard it first. But for now, SUV. Now, have we actually got the right vehicle for this journey? Because in many ways, this thing is over-specced. This is the right thing if we want to go green laning or mountaineering, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, but it's fine vehicle on the road. I quite like it compared to my sort of 300 TDI Defenders. It's pretty comfy, pretty quiet, loads of go. It is a lot of wind noise from the roof rack that it's got on it.
Okay.
But I think it's just from the roof rack.
Let's let them hear this. Listen to this, you can hear it. Listen. Sounds like we're in a hurricane, but I think Phil's absolutely right. Because we've got this full length roof rack, the entire length of the roof of the vehicle, it pokes right forward and therefore creates a little venturi just in front of the driver's seat. You can hear it being accelerated through there. That's what we're hearing, wind noise from that. The rest of the vehicle is not as noisy as you might expect for something that looks like it was styled by Meccano. But that styled by Meccano thing is quite a good look. Does it look chic, Chris, or is it a bit too much, this vehicle? What do you think of the way it looks?
Oh, I like the way it looks. I think it looks brilliant, yeah. Love it. Well, inside and out. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Outside, I should say that this one is finished in what they call inky black. And we've got a limited edition version. This is the 1924 Belstaff limited edition. Ineos, apart from starting their own car company, also bought the Belstaff brand a few years ago, and so they've incorporated that Belstaff functionality, if you like, that sort of feeling of Belstaff, I'm in the country, I can do anything. They've brought that to the vehicle by making 1,924 of these limited edition 1924 Belstaff editions, and there's a badge on the vehicle that says 1 of 1924, and I thought, oh, maybe this is the first one, but every single one says this is 1 of 1924. It doesn't mean it's the first. Apart from that, the differences on the interior, there's a Belstaff badge in the overhead central column. There's some darker panelling to the roof lining than you normally get in a Grenadier. But so far, I think my two favourite things about the Grenadier are, number one, the overhead switches. There's a panel in between the driver and the front passenger on the ceiling with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 ruddy great big switches, and some of them are like the sort of circuit breaker switches that you might see on an Apollo spacecraft or a naval vessel. Really chunky looking, and I think that's well cool having all that up there. And that design ethic is mirrored in the central panel as well, where the hazard warnings, it's great. The hazard has got big, what do you call that, diagonal checker and two aluminium bars around it so you don't accidentally hit it. It looks like this is not the button you must ever press. I'm not going to press it. I'm tempted, but I'm not going to press it. As far as the rest of the interior of the vehicle goes, it's hard, right? There's a lot of truck-grade plastic, I would say that is. Sort of Ford Transit, slightly posher than a Ford Transit. It's not plush like a Range Rover. It's not plush like a Discovery. It's meant to be utilitarian. That was the whole ethic of the Grenadier, that it would be hoseable out exterior and interior. And, well, it's got some nice leather in the doors, and it looks familiar. It doesn't look like a car made by a company who've never built a car before. And I think that's all down to the people that they chose to design and engineer it, and the suppliers. They went to pretty much the same suppliers that you would get if you were Land Rover or BMW or Mercedes. There are no paddles, but you can pump it up and down if you want on the gear selector. The transmission is actually from ZF, so I think that is the same box mated to lots of BMWs with this engine, so it should be well engineered. I've struggled to get my phone to charge from the USB sockets in the central armrest. Is it charging? Oh yeah, I got 12% now, but it was really struggling. I tried three cables before any of those cables worked in combination with my phone and that charging point. I'm intrigued by your reaction to this car more than anyone's, Phil, because I know that you're a dyed-in-the-wool Land Rover enthusiast, and to find you at the helm of a pretender to the throne, if you like, a Land Rover pretender, that's what we should call it. How does it make you feel?
A lot of different feedback from people when they first came out. I haven't got an issue with them at all, and I think this model in black is a very nice looking machine. From the back and the flanks of the vehicle, it's hard to tell it apart from a Defender.
Yeah.
The lines are almost identical. It looks very different from the front end, but it doesn't bother me. It's not unpleasant. The interior space is nigh on identical to a long wheelbase Land Rover. Space in the front, space in the rear passenger compartment, and on this, the load bay.
You're talking about the classic ladder chassis Land Rover, aren't you?
I'm not talking about the new Defender. They're out of my reach, those machines, as is this at, what, £82,000, you know? Yeah. But I'm a big fan of the serviceability and the ruggedness of an old Land Rover. Not so much the series Land Rovers. They've got their own set of fans. But the 200 and the 300 TDIs, I'm a massive fan of them. And this vehicle, it doesn't disappoint me. I'd like to try it off the road. But personally, on the road, if you're pushing it, I think the rear suspension needs beefing up a little bit. It's not happy in sweeping bends at speed, really.
We're close to 3 tons, aren't we? The vehicle's 2.5 tons with us in it and the kit.
Yeah.
So that's probably why it's a bit floaty. And we are hurrying around some of these bends. It, of course, it's not designed to be a driver's car, a sports car. It's designed to articulate the suspension and not warp the chassis. And so there are compromises on the road that come with that. But Jim Ratcliffe, Sir Jim, is adamant that there is a market big enough for people who want this sort of vehicle, and most of those people at the moment are probably buying pickups, Hiluxes, Navaras, Amaroks, Rangers, Isuzu D-Maxes, of course, and what's the Mitsubishi? The L300, isn't it? Yeah.
Also, this machine as well. I don't think there's another contender. But not a replacement, but a comparable vehicle to the original Defender.
Yeah.
That's my feeling on it.
What we're actually in is essentially a 21st century version of a 20th century vehicle. Sort of developed as far as you can without starting from scratch and deleting the ladder frame chassis and putting a monocoque in, which is what I believe all the other rivals have done, right, in terms of SUVs these days. We like it. I have to say, we like it. The moment we picked the car up, the guys were very keen to see it. And when they saw it, the universal reaction was, oh, yeah, this is all right. Maybe we were expecting it to be underdeveloped, maybe, because it's a new company, or full of flaws. Haven't really detected any at the moment, apart from one minor one, which is this. Listen. Right, over the front two seats, you've got what are called safari windows, glass panels, which allow you to vent at the front for when you're in super hot climates. And you can actually remove those two glass panels as well, unless you've specified the full length roof rack. And that means not only can you not get these safari panels out, the glass panels out, but you can't leave it open. It won't actually lock open. So that's the nearest thing I've spotted to a flaw on the vehicle. And in the meantime, Phil's flooring it. At legal speeds, Phil, of course, we are.
Of course, yes.
We would not dream of breaking any law. Yeah. Let's hope we make it to New Haven.
That's smart looking Range Rover.
We just passed a blue new Range Rover. Uh oh, queue ahead. Right, I'm not going to sit here and give you a commentary on every minute of this 4.5 hour journey that we've got to do in 3.5 hours to make our boat. But we'll update you in due course. You know what they say? A problem shared is a problem two people now have.
A trouble shared is a trouble doubled.
A trouble shared is a trouble doubled. Oh, that's poetry. Are you enjoying the quiet? It's a rare quiet moment here at the Team Langoustine campsite at Le Mans. Yes, we made it. We made the ferry. As we arrived, the guy at check-in said, "You're cutting it a bit fine." And there was only one other vehicle behind us which got on the boat. But we made it, and we cruised across France, and now we're at Tête Rouge. You can probably hear the cars in the distance because Hyperpole has just started. Hang on, I've got to make a request of these guys about dinner. Hang on. Guys, we've got two people joining us in about an hour's time. Can we save them a couple of bits of lasagna? Is that possible?
Yeah. We're here until 10 o'clock.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed. There you go. That's Zog and Stevie's dinner sorted. Current time is 20:49 in Euro time, and we're settled in nicely, aren't we, Phil?
Yeah, lovely.
All good. We thought we'd just have a quick wander around the campsite on the way up to the bank to watch Hyperpole and tell you about some of the vehicles here. What's caught your eye, Phil?
Well, again, the Cobra.
You said that last year. Is it the same one?
I think it is. There was two here last year. There was, I think it was that one, and then there was like a sort of bronzy, gold-coloured one, wasn't it?
Who doesn't love a Cobra? Let's just take a walk down the avenue and tell you about some of the cars. A Ford Ranger 226 Limited. Pickups, you know I'm a big fan of the pickup. A Porsche 996. A nice 911 in black. C-Reg, what's that, 83? Yeah, 83. A BMW M4, I think. An Audi S line, what do we call that? The A4, is it? Two Audis, a Golf, not that exciting yet. Let's go down and see what we've got. Oh, a Jaguar F Pace in a nice gunmetal grey. Another BMW in a state car. Again, if you can't do a pickup, an estate car is a good option. A Porsche Macan S. Oh, wait until you hear what I've sorted for Zog for 20 years on speed. He's got a real treat. Oh, and a Ferrari. Okay, what's this? A 599? What do we call it? It's a red Ferrari. Long bonnet. What do they call it? It's not the Skag, is it? It's, I can't even remember these days. A nicely blacked out Jaguar XJF convertible. And this is the way I said F and not S or S. With my lisp. A Hyundai Ioniq 5 N, the N5. Now that's a good thing. And they've got a cable and it's plugged into a generator charging it here. Is that your N5?
No, the
M5. No, this Ioniq 5N.
He's kept walking along here.
He's a great car.
He's got a waddle like this.
Really? Well, it's a good job the M5's a wide car then, right? Because it is a big car. Love the 5N, not the N5. An Audi RS6, another BMW M4, a Porsche 911 GT3. Oh, that looks good. Oh, that's beautiful. Gosh, it's immaculate. A Mazda RX-8. I think I've said this on the programme before, but the Mazda RX-8 is the car I found most difficult to keep below 120 miles per hour. There's a big black Range Rover. There's another Ferrari. There's an AMG SLK. The V8. Oh, that's nice. Nice, a little AMG. That's a nice idea. Oh, there's an E-Type, a red E-Type coupe part round here. I'm going to talk to the chap who owns it. Excuse me, sir. I've got to talk to you about your car.
Right.
Giving you any trouble? I see you've got the bonnet open. What's going on?
Yeah, no, just checking it over. I mean, we've got down here without any problems.
No overheating or anything?
No, these don't overheat, believe it or not. No, it's been really good. So, yeah, we got down with no problems at all. So hopefully we get back with it with no problems.
Yeah, well, half the journey's done.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the car 45 years.
Have you really? You've owned it since almost new, right? Almost new, 20 years old.
It's about nine years old, but it was in a bit of a mess, to be quite honest. And well, I think I had mud written across my forehead. But, you know, it's a learning process. I do all the sort of maintenance myself, so...
Because you can on a car of this period, can't you?
So, it's been okay. You know, so it's came down and didn't miss a beat all the way down.
Glad to hear it. What's your name?
Barry.
Barry, I'm Gareth. Nice to meet you, sir.
I'll tell you what the funny thing is, my son's in the tent there, and when he was a baby, I've had this car 45 years. When he was a baby, he always wanted to go in the car and press all the buttons, right? Today is his first drive. He drove it halfway down it.
Oh, how wonderful.
That's like a full... Do you know what I mean? It's like...
Full circle, coming back home.
No, it's incredible. I took some pictures of him driving it, and it's like... You know, it's
about as warms the heart, doesn't it?
I know.
Do you know why I like the E-Type? It was born the same year as me, 1961.
Right, okay.
So I feel a kinship with this car.
Yeah, they're nice cars. I mean, I don't know what's happened to Jaguar over the last few years anyway. Yeah. I don't know what's... Yeah, it's a shame, really, don't you think?
Well, people weren't buying them, so they had to address a new audience.
Yeah, I know, but if they addressed the right audience, I don't know. It's like... I mean, when you had like William Lyons in charge of the company, he knew what he was doing. He had an eye for design and got the right people. to design the cars and everything. And I think it's just like a corporate thing there. I mean, there's some of their bloody adverts they've had recently.
They sacked the company who made that advert for them. Did you hear that?
They have, but I mean, whose fault's that? I mean, that's a good way of getting out of it, isn't
it? Yeah.
The company. I mean, they agreed for them to do it in the first place, so. I think it's really sad. And driving down here, you know, I mean, lots of people are like in Ferraris and all that. When they go past, they put their thumbs up and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I didn't see any modern Jaguars driving down here at all. There's loads of Audis and Mercedes and all that that look really nice, really nice cars, really well designed and all that. And,
well, that's the answer to the question. You know, why they've rebooted Jaguar, because you didn't see anyone on the way over here. People won't buy them.
But what a shame.
It is a shame.
What do you do about it? Once you've lost the thing, how do you get it back? I don't know.
Start from scratch again.
I don't know. You know,
a new E-Type.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to bring William Lyons back from the dead, won't you? And
they're bringing mammoths back, so anything's possible.
Yeah. Well. Anyway.
Barry, lovely to meet you, sir.
Okay,
adore your car. Beautiful.
Yeah,
well, enjoy.
Yeah. Right. Thanks.
See you later. Bye bye. Park next to a Carrera S, a BMW M340D estate. You see, that's a good car for Le Mans, Chris, isn't it?
Mm.
An estate car like that. Do you, sir? Would you drive a BMW?
Nah.
You drive a Volkswagen, don't you?
Yeah.
And a Volvo.
And a Volvo, yes.
A Volvo. Yes, a Volvo. Oh, Maserati Ghibli. I love a Ghibli. I love all Maseratis. I do, because they get ignored most of the time, because they're...
As we walk past it.
Yeah. Just walk past it and ignored it, correct. As a Skoda Superb, which is much better than the Skoda Reasonably Good, which was the previous car. Didn't do terribly well, that. This is your car. This is Chris's car. We're standing in front of a...
Well, this is a California beach, isn't it? And he's put these sort of off-road swamp wheel things on. Yeah, so it's a factory California beach.
Is it, this is a, what do you call it, a 5? This is a...
T6. T6.1 is what this is.
We're talking about the transporter-based camper, which is what Chris owns. We almost came in this year. Almost.
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 Next time.
Next time, yeah, definitely. What else have we got? We've got some quality chairs. Outside the transporter, some very, very nice quality camping chairs. Not like the lightweight nonsense I'm carrying. What we got? Renault traffic van. Mercedes. What's this? It's a GLE 350D. Again, another great car for camping. Lots of room. Quite a few motorhomes here this year. Don't remember seeing quite so many motorhomes before. There's a couple of absolute belting cars on the corner or around the corner on the way to where we're camping. There's a Mustang GT, I think it is, from 68 69, in blue. I mean, Zog's gonna want to take pictures of that when he arrives. There are a pair of TVRs here, and I'm very pleased to see them here, because most TVRs don't make it. Oh, it's a Tamora, the other one, a Tuscan and a Tamora. Most TVRs don't make it here. Another Maserati, two Maseratis, another 911. You've probably got a good idea of the kind of people who come and... Oh, a Genesis GV60, an electric car. Quite a few electric cars here this year, like that Hyundai 5N. I like Genesis, and of course Genesis will be running in the hypercar class next year. So maybe we can come in a Genesis next year. That would be a good idea. You know, I'm a big fan of the work of the mighty Hyundai Kia Corporation. But enough of the campsite. Shall we go up to the little hillock just at the entrance to Tête Rouge, and we can go and listen to some cars racing for Hyperpole? Come on, let's go. Here's a bit of Atmos for you. The commentary on the Tannoy system, because I think we can call it that. At the approach to Tête Rouge, the murmur of the crowd around me, many of them French, but lots of Brits as well, because the Team Langoustine campsite is seconds, not even minutes, seconds away from this position, so there's a lot of Brits here. And we're waiting for Hyperpole. Hey, comes Chris now. And the shock news at this point is that Toyota didn't make it through to the top round of Hyperpole. Wow. Now, Toyota, I thought, were going to be out for revenge this year, because Ferrari have won it 2 years in a row. And Toyota, one of the few teams who can take the challenge to the Maranello concern. Also interesting reading in the news today that the guy who runs the Ferrari AF course Le Mans program is being considered as a possible replacement for Fred Vasseur at Ferrari, which kind of makes sense, but it's a very different game, isn't it, WEC to F1. You know, I'm not saying that Ferrari in WEC and Le Mans don't have the kind of level of competition that the Ferrari in Formula 1 do, but they've certainly come into the sport flying and have made everyone else play catch up. How much of that is down to the balance of performance and absolute performance of the car? Who knows? But we'll find out over this wonderful weekend of motorsport. Now all we need is for a car. Love the sound of the commentary at the trackside. But I'm just going to sit here quietly and wait for the first car. It's coming. Damn it, missed the first two cars through. Here we go. That's one of the Toyotas, the one in the black mainstream. There goes one of the Hertz team Cadillacs, Jota, running them this year. There's my Ferrari. There goes another Porsche. More Porsches. Alpine. Another Alpine. And listen. Yeah. There it is, the Valkyrie. Ah, love that sound. Nice to have a V12 in the top class here. I'm looking forward to hearing that coming around a second time at full chat. Say again, Chris. Yeah, that was it. Just went by. The one that screams. Chris asking if the Aston's out. It sounds lovely, doesn't it? Yeah. Sound better than the Cadillac, Phil?
No, I think the Cadillac sound the best.
It does. It does rattle the fillings in your teeth. But I like the way that the Valkyrie is added to the choir. You've heard me say this before, but I consider the lineup of cars on the grid at Le Mans like a choir, where you've got traditionally the Ferraris are the tenors, aren't they? And the Cadillacs and the Corvettes are the bass and the baritone, and the Porsches are the baritone as well, I suppose. But to have a soprano in the choir now that sings like that, lovely, lovely. Right, I'm looking at the screen. I can see them on the Mulsanne, not the Mulsanne, the other straight. My brain has faded. It's been a very long day. Managed to get 4 hours sleep last night on the ferry, on a seat, on the way here. So I'm a little spaced out at the moment. And also enjoying a can of beer. Oh, that was nice. Just had a mouthful of beer. And by the way, if you're thinking of coming to Le Mans and you want to really enjoy it and find the trip all very easy, come to the Team Langoustine camping site, because they are really good. It's a great position, it's easy to find, the food is good. Speaking as a vegetable Presbyterian, the food is very, very good, and the vibe is good as well. It feels like being in a club, a very nice club. and filling. Can you tell? Because the lap here is, what, 3 minutes 26 or something like that? And as I haven't edited this section of the programme whatsoever, you'll be able to back time the sound that those last cars went past me and before they come round again. Although that 3:26 time is from the start finish straight, and we are about a mile and a half away from that, so it could be different. Here we go, listen, stereo time. You can always tell when the cars are coming. BMW, that second one. Grumpy Toyota. Sounds very throaty, doesn't it? A pair of filthy Cadillacs. As I was saying, you can tell when the cars are coming. The helicopter comes first. That's the AF Corse. That's Kubica's Ferrari. Ferrari, Porsche, Cadillac, Porsche, Ferrari. There are four Cadillacs running this year. Alpine sounds nice. Woo, sounds very space age, doesn't it? Everybody's attention follows the Valkyrie when it goes round, the Aston Martin. Everybody's heads are drawn to that car, and it looks right. So, of course, the whole idea of hypercar was to allow road cars to be able to compete with specialist race cars. And the only hypercar running at the moment that truly is a road car is that Aston Martin. Well done, THOR, Thor, the heart of racing, for getting that car sorted and getting it to Le Havre. How are they going to do in the race? Well, we'll find out over the weekend. I'm slightly confused because this is the first bit of track action we've seen, because we arrived a couple of hours ago, 4 hours ago, and it took a while to set up the tent and eat and all that. But we heard on Radio Le Mans that Toyota hadn't gone through to Hyperpole, and yet there is very definitely a Toyota running with Brandon Hartley driving it going around at the moment. So what changed? How did that work? We missed something. As you know, it's very hard to keep up with what's happening at Le Mans unless you pay careful attention to Radio Le Mans and the commentary and the screens and your app. But most of the time, you're just here soaking up the vibe. And the vibe here on the hill is very nice. The interesting thing about Le Mans this year, one of the many interesting things about Le Mans this year, is that Hyperpole is kind of following the Formula One approach to qualification, where, you know, the top six or the top 12 go through to the next round. And what that has done is limited the number of cars on the circuit at the same time. So when you get people going for absolute pole at this race this year, there are only 10 cars on the circuit. So they don't have to manage traffic or anything like that. They can go for the perfect lap. And there's a bit of jockeying for position going on, because we just watched a Cadillac fly past a Porsche under braking on the entry into Tête Rouge. So they're all looking for the open circuit, which you can get on a circuit that is, what is it, 13.6 kilometres long, or is it 16.4 kilometres long? I can't remember. You'd think I'd know this stuff. I've been coming here for 23 years. But you forget, right? You forget. Only one Ferrari has gone through to the final round of Hyperpole. I say Hyperpole, we should say Hyperpole, because that's how the French say it. But only one Ferrari's gone through, which doesn't bode well for me, because Ferrari are my team this year, as they were last year. Although I have to admit, I'm going to keep an eye on the Aston Martin Valkyries as well, because they sound so nice and I want them here. I don't think they're going to do well, but that doesn't mean they don't need support. In fact, quite the opposite. It's the teams that are struggling that you need to support the most, right? That's how it works. That's why I love the Rodeus. It's such a horrible car, nobody loves it. So it needs your love, right? It's like being a bit disfigured or something, isn't it? You need to love those people more, right? Sorry if that was a bit disablest. I didn't mean it to sound like that. Here we go, bit of audio. BMW, I think that was. Not quite familiar. BMW, yeah? Not quite familiar with the liveries yet. I haven't had a chance to study the form. Chris is telling me that, yeah, one of the BMWs is yellow, the other one is red, white and blue. Here we go. That's the Ferrari. Throaty. You know what that was. Haircut, noisy Cadillac. Sorry, I'm hiccuping because I've got a beer here. Porsche. Another Porsche. They're not even on the brakes at this point, and we are less than 100 metres from Tête Rouge. They are braking as late as you possibly can, because that's how you win in motor racing. But you know that, don't you? That's an Alpine. I wish Mick Schumacher very well at Alpine. He's a good lad. He perhaps not quite as quick as his dad was, is anyone, but he's turned out to be a very quick sports car driver. Just listen to the audio now of the cars as they brake and accelerate up the Mulsanne Strait or Hunaudière. Wham there, Chris.
Someone went into the gravel and...
Someone hit the gravel.
Ferrari coming round, nearly went to the back of it.
They are trying very hard. When you think about it, in a 24-hour race, pole position isn't as crucial as it is in a one-and-a-half-hour race where it's hard to overtake. But they are basically racing for status here, for the bragging rights of being able to say, yeah, we got pole at Le Mans. And that's the only reason they're doing it. Because the difference between starting on pole and starting 12th at Le Mans is kind of academic on a race that runs for 24 flipping hours. Right, I'm watching the screen and I can see a car up the start finish straight with the sun setting, the red clouds in the sky. We should hear a car come under the Dunlop Bridge, through the S's and in the approach to Tête Rouge any second. Here we go. Porsche.
3475, millième des Mandic Tati, avec le voiture sœur, la numéro 83-23-983, Alex Céline, apparaît donc au classement avec la Cadillac F. Note la numéro 3475-098.
That Ferrari that went past third then, being a little ginger coming into Tête Rouge, the others are breaking at the last possible second. And the joy of being able to sit here, metres away from the cars, and get that sense of how fearless these drivers are. You don't get it until you're here. So take my advice, come here next year. Hello, our continuing coverage of the 93rd running of the 24 Hours of Le Mans. We are here at the circuit. Everyone says that. We are here. Yeah, we know you're there, right? You've just told us. We can see you somewhere. Everybody's got to be somewhere. Short diversion, sorry. But we're here at the Team Langoustine campsite, which is a kind of a club campsite, which is right on the inside of Tête Rouge, right in front of the Stade Marie Marvin. And I think that's how you pronounce it. That's the local football team stadium, I think. But luckily I've got someone here now who's pretty fluent in the French language. Hey, Zog.
Bonjour.
Comment ça va?
Ça va bien, merci. Et toi?
Je suis très bon, merci. Merci.
Yeah.
Well, amazed I got through that in French, because often when I try and speak other languages, I end up speaking Welsh. It always comes out Welsh.
You are aware that there are other languages.
I've heard of them, yes. Hey, Jacques, how was your journey?
It was terrific. No, we had a very, very easy trip, which I put down partly to the fact that we were a couple of hours later travelling down on Thursday than we usually do, and so we kind of missed that bigger slug of Le Mans bound vehicles and maybe some other, you know, bits of traffic during the day. So we had very little traffic either on the road or getting into Le Mans. It was great.
Cool. Yeah, were you here to greet you at the campsite gate when you arrived last night with one headlamp working?
You were, yeah. We dropped all the bags, the cocktail cabinet, and then parked the car and got back to catch up and relax.
You heard the word cocktail cabinet there and espresso machine.
Espresso machine, yeah. I've got a little hand pump espresso machine that, as long as you've got some boiling water and some coffee, suitably ground coffee, you can make yourself a little espresso. So I've been using that already. As we haven't had any ice, I haven't been able to sort us any cocktails, but we've got fixings for margaritas, rum cocktails, a couple of other things.
Come on. We have a source of ice. The campsite here have got a tremendous bar and amazingly helpful staff. This is not a paid thing, by the way. I'm saying this because, what is it? Not a sponsor's announcement, is it? They're great. You stayed at lots of sites at Le Mans with me over the last 23 years.
It's been a few. I'm impressed. We got here last night. It is now afternoon, so I haven't spent all that much time here. But big thumbs up to the shower blocks. Very important. The hot water was reliable and up to temperature. And we got a lovely little pitch there. And the staff have been super helpful. So, yeah, two thumbs up.
Good start. Stevie, pick up your bike. Let's walk and talk. And Stevie Sackin is with us as well. Hi, Burv. How are you?
Very well.
Zog told me that the journey was pretty good.
It was amazing. Well, Zog drove all the way, so...
Entire triple stint?
I drove to Dover.
Right, oh, right, yeah, you did the UK stint.
Exactly, yeah. And then the moment the side switched,
yeah,
I handed over and...
But did you hit a bug swarm or something?
A what?
A bug swarm.
Well, the car was absolutely covered in an Armageddon of bug carcasses by the end, so much so you couldn't read the number plate.
You were going very quick?
Zog was driving. How quick were we going?
We were going bang on the speed limit on or, just about every bit of road. Well, I wasn't pushing it, didn't want to get going.
See you later, Ella. Bye. One of the staff, Ella. They're champions here, absolute champions, everyone. Yeah, well, we're glad to have you here. And
so wonderful.
We're off now to the Musée Le 24 Heures du Monde. That's correct, right?
Très bien, oui, oui, oui.
Merci, because you're fluent too, aren't you, Stevie?
Oh, complètement fluent.
With a convincing accent. It's the accent that does it, really.
Toujours l'accent.
Yeah, we last visited the museum. We're going left, by the way. We last visited the museum in 2017, Stevie. You, me and Zog.
I remember it. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's been extended now, I think?
I believe so, yeah.
And
yeah.
They switched the cars over?
Yeah, yeah, they rotate vehicles, yeah. So we'll get another show, right?
I was going to say, but 2017, like the idea that I'd remember...
when it happened.
Exactly. Sorry, who I was at the time.
Well, this is the trouble with me. My entire life is documented. You know, television programmes are dated. You know when they're from. My podcast is dated. I remember when these events happen because I always podcast at Le Mans.
Of course.
It's like I have a living diary, this bloody programme.
No, but... Actually, I remember it too. Because of the recording, because of the podcast, the photographs and the sort of banter and stuff, I remember it so well. 2017, I can't believe it's so long ago.
Well, you know, when you think back to our last visit there, what immediately comes to mind? Is there any one particular car or one display or...
Oh, blimey. There was a display of old photographs. I can't remember...
As you walk in,
yeah.
There used to be a History of Le Mans kind of exhibit with some beautiful posters and pictures of drivers from the dawn of the race, which was 1923.
Yes.
God, of course it was, yes. Right, Chris and Phil are just talking to the excellent staff, and when they're ready, boys, excuse me, I'm going to have to whistle. Come on, you guys, let's go, we got to go. Craig, hero. Hang on, this is Craig, who's one of the hard-working people at the site. Craig, how's it going? We're giving you trouble?
No, not at all. You're brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
No, we're not. We're mischief.
No, you're not.
Everyone happy? You guys not overworked?
No, not at all.
How long's your day shift?
So before it goes on to shift, we are pretty much where we're needed. And then we're on shift, and it's my shift's morning, which is 8 until 4.
Do you get any time to chill with people? We had 10 minutes with you last night. That was great.
Yeah, we get a little bit. We obviously get everybody in, and then it calms down a little bit, make sure all the customers are happy and having a good time. And then we go out and can see a little bit as well.
Customers are happy. I've got to go. The boys are gone. See you later, brother. Ta-ra. Incredible energy levels from the young staff here. I say that because I'm 63, so everybody's younger than me. But really impressive energy levels. They work so hard. They do it with glee. It's a good vibe. Good vibe. Right. Where are we? We've just left the campsite just behind Virage Tête Rouge, you know, the viewing point at Tête Rouge, the bank, as you know. And I now... entering one of the pedestrian tunnels that go underneath Tête Rouge. Now, there's no running today because it's Friday. I had to think about that. The big race is tomorrow. And quite frankly, because I was up till 3:30 catching up with Zoggy and Stevie and Chris and Phil as well, I'm pretty whacked. So a nice quiet day at the circuit just to orient is very welcome. So if you're planning a trip to Le Mans, seriously, it's massive. Don't expect to be able to do everything all the time. Build yourself a little bit of spare time. How about that? Well, right, I'm out of the tunnel. It was lovely sitting on the bank last night watching Hyperpole. It was just divine. Cool breeze. Left turn, everybody. Left turn. And now we're heading up to one of the semi-permanent stands that they have here. Covered grandstand overlooking the S's. We watched the race from there before now, Zog, haven't we? That one, or is it the next one?
That one, yeah, we've been in that stand on one occasion, and on the banking near there as well. That's a good place to watch. You see the cars coming under the Dunlop Bridge, and then making that left and right now, so that's a really good place to watch.
Yeah, we like it there. We tend to spend a good couple of hours at least at some point during the race just soaking up the cars, weaving their way through the S's before they head down to the famous Tête Rouge, one of our favourite places. Right then, I'm not going to make you do this entire journey with me as we walk past everything. Generators. What's that? À ce prix-là, je déménage tous les jours. Something every day, right? We help you every day?
At this price... Yes, at this price... I'm not quite sure, honestly, what
this price. How can you not do it every day?
Like, yeah, this is this price. We've got it'll work for you every day, or it'll
right. That's written on the side of written on the side of a sixth renter van here, and it caught my eye. Hey, there's a massive crane. That must be a 90-foot crane, 100-foot crane, Phil, which is right next to our campsite where they're building a hotel. So I don't know how that will affect the number of spaces available at the Team Langoustine campsite in future, but I know that Mark Adams will be arguing very strongly to make sure he gets a huge volume of space there, because he can attract an awful lot of people to this race by delivering a good service. Mark Adams, the guy who runs Team Langoustine. Sorry, Phil, how high is that crane?
30 metres.
Oh, yeah, 100 foot. There you go. Whopping. And it looks lovely. It's all red, white and blue, being French. Or Russian, or British. But in this case, French. And it's lit at night, and it's really quite sweet. At the campsite, you look up and there's this other thing to draw your attention away from the constant overstimulation of being at Le Mans. Everything you look at, you want to spend 10 minutes thinking about that. Hey, I'm going to catch my breath because I've got to pull the group together and before we lose each other. There's a Gulf jet, I think there is, Gulfstream, takes off from Le Mans Airport, which is parallel, or adjacent, I should say, to the start-finish straight at the Circuit de la Sarre. And one other thing that you can't see, I'll describe. It's not every day you see a Goodyear blimp quietly droning. Closed? We got to go this way, then. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the path we thought we were going to take is closed. As you know, I got a little bit lost last year because they've changed the layout a little bit. And this place is vast. As we approach the S's, I'm going to talk for a minute or two because the stuff I've got to describe I'm seeing right now. It's like a natural amphitheatre in front of me. The S's flowing right and left and right, crossing from right to left. And you can see every moment of the circuit for what must be half a kilometre, 500 metres or something. And it's a great place to watch the race. And if you want to get to know the circuit, today is your opportunity to walk the track or cycle the track or electric scooter the track or run the track. Now, Stevie's got his bike with him, and depending on how hot it is when we come out of the museum, Stevie's going to go and cycle the circuit. That's bold. I only say that. I mean, it's 13.6 kilometres. So, yeah, there are people doing that right now. Lots of people walking over the Dunlop Bridge. It's almost like the post-apocalyptic thing, isn't it, where the zombies have invaded the circuit and appearing from over the Dunlop Bridge, slowly advancing towards you, shuffling, and that's what they do, isn't it, zombies? Not anymore.
Well, it depends whether you're talking your traditional zombie or your 28 days later zombie.
Which
or
changed everything.
What was the other one with the fast
Walking
zombies?
Dead. The Last of Us zombies.
Possibly. There was a film. There was another film with fast zombies. Which would have been before Last of Us, a little TV programme.
They can look it up, right? But I know what you mean.
Zombies, but your traditional zombie is slow and lumbering.
These are motorsport zombies coming towards us. It's the Walking Dead, Phil, coming over the horizon at us. Here they come. This is the grandstand we were in. It wasn't that one, it was this one. We were trying to work out which one we were in many, many, many years ago. I think it was 2017, I came by train. These guys got caught in traffic. It was actually this grandstand, wasn't it? Not that one, it was this one. We had a roof.
Yes, we had a roof, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
And you took less time to get from Paris than we took from the campsite.
Yeah, correct. I arrived here an hour on my seat, 2 hours before you, an hour before you got in, after the race had started, you got
here. Yeah, the race was just reaching a climax, I think.
So, if you're thinking of coming to Le Mans, plan, build in extra time. Second time I've said that in this programme. Right, as we walk away from the pop music on the Tannoy system, before one of the algorithms on YouTube identifies what that is and tries to charge me for using it, we'll kill it here. For the moment, see you at the museum.
Gareth Jones on speed.
The best laid plans of men and motorsport fans. Or is it best laid plans of mice and motorsport fans? Something like that. Sometimes go wrong. The museum isn't open for general admission today, which is a surprise. They were letting people in, but they had very different passes to the rest of us. So maybe this is a new thing at Le Mans. I misread the programme on the Le Mans website. So, yeah, no museum trip today. Stevie's going to ride around the circuit. Zog is walking some of the way around the circuit on his way up to our campsite at Tête Rouge, if they'll let him out there. And I'm in the pit lane now with Phil and Chris, currently standing outside the Mustangs and the Proton Competition and the Iron Lynx garages, all next to each other at the moment. The number 7 Orica, the Iron Lynx Proton car, Reed, Capietto and De Geras, forget their first names. But I can see my mate Neil Jarny's car. Neil Jarny is in the number 99 Proton Competition 963. And if I can get near the garage, let's just have a look. Neil won't be here. He'll be down at the driver's parade today, or chilling before that. But let's just have a look at the cars. How are we doing, boys? All right?
Yep. We?
Yeah. That's one of my cars, Neil Jarny. He was in...
Tell you what, 99, that'll take a good lick in that car.
Hey! And they'll be using Luft balloons to keep it light, yes. Neil Jarny was a driver in Aimon Grand Prix, won the championship in the second year, if I remember, for Team Switzerland at the time. Top bloke, lovely lad. And what else have we got here in the cars? Let's have a look. The Ford Performance, the Proton Competition Mustang LMG GT3 garage in Ford blue, deep blue, not the light blue, but Ford's deep blue. They own all the blues, don't they, Ford? But yeah, that's the Ford deep blue, like on the back of the logo. It's not historically, the current one. They've simplified the Ford logo recently, as many manufacturers have done. Oh, I heard something very witty earlier on. Well, it made me laugh. There was a chap in a wheelchair coming up in through the gate into the pit lane as I arrived, and he said to the person with him who was pushing the chair, he says to him, "Oh, look, there's a Lexus garage. Don't worry about that, not interested." And it made me laugh, because I'm thinking, does anyone come to Le Mans supporting Toyota and Lexus? Anybody? No, they don't, do they? I know they do well, and they've got a great history here. Toyota celebrating their 40th year, I believe, at Le Mans this year. But yeah, it's not a brand that you can get passionate about. And I say that because I owned a Toyota that was sold as a Lexus in a lot of markets for how many years? 19 years. And was I really ever bothered about Toyota in Le Mans? Well, they kept the sport going. I admired them for that, but I couldn't get passionate about it. I'm posing for a photo. That's Chris taking a photo of me in the pit lane. All sweaty and hot, very, very hot. The wind is blowing down the start-finish straight. We were just staking out our position because this year we don't have grandstand tickets. So we're trying to work out if we're brave enough and have enough stamina to get into the start-finish straight and stake out a place some 2 hours before the start of the race. That's what it's going to take for us to be able to do that. So we've chosen our position and we'll see if we can do it tomorrow. Oh, here we are. Here they are. Yes. We're outside the Aston Martin garage now. The racing spirit of Le Mans. This is the GT car. And next to it, with an enormous crowd around it, are the two hypercars. Heart of Racing. Thor. THOR. That's funny though. But I don't understand the backstory of where they got the name from. I think they're kind of a charity in some form, aren't they? That they give to charities as part of their sort of mission brief, their existence. But here we go. Let's have a look. Can we see?
El Aston, no?
Sí, pero este es el del...
Just about see. Aston Martin Thor team. Thor, Valkyrie, get it? Makes sense. All the Nordic sagas. The Scandi saga. Yeah, is it going to be a Scandi saga where it all gets very messy for Thor Valkyrie tomorrow? You know, is there going to be blood and death? I hope not. I don't mean that sort of blood and death. I mean, you know, disaster and tears and engineering breakdowns and drama, stories of great drama. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's 8 deep to get a picture of the Valkyries. But I want to get in there and tell you what I can see, right? Because a picture's worth 1,000 words. So let me see if I can give you 1,000 words on this car. Right, this is prep day, so there's a chassis in the garage on chassis stands, lifted up, two mechanics working on it, it's facing me, the nose isn't on, the doors are open and they are butterfly wing doors, or gull wing I should say, on this car, unlike many of the others which are scissor doors. It is clean, it is immaculate. I'm looking at the front of the footwell with the suspension members hung off, and they are beautifully put together and beautifully put on. It looks like a piece of quality kit. It's in green, what we might describe as British racing green, with the yellow highlights and the yellow wing mirrors on the number, the 007 car. And this is the car that I'm backing. I don't think it'll win, but I'm going to watch it ever so carefully. Below my feet right now, I'm trying not to kick it accidentally, is half side pod of the 007 car. I'm going to kiss it with my fingers and wish it luck. Good luck. Gosh, that's light and carbon fibre. And the rest of the bodywork is sitting right in front of me. I could touch it, but I'm not going to. There's the fin and the rear wing for two cars, 007 and 009, in front of me. Just wicked. They look like they belong on a stealth fighter. There's an awful lot of exposed black carbon fibre with green on the end plates. That's the V8 running of the number 27 LM GT3 car, putting it through a heat cycle by the sound of things in the background. Or is that the number 28? I can't tell because I'm wearing headphones exactly which of the two cars. You can take the headphones off. Yeah, it's the nearer car, the 27 car. Because you don't get proper stereo audio when you're wearing headphones. You get a version of that. Yeah, all goes quiet in that garage. You better get out of the way and let people take pictures. Lovely. But we wish them well, right? fighting my way out now. What else do I want to see? I found Phil. Stay with me. This is in real time, this is. No editing whatsoever. Just continuously droning about cars at the moment with a bit of French Atmos in the background, which I hope isn't too distracting for your thought process, but it adds the atmosphere, that reverberation that you get down the grandstands. So another couple of LMP2 car garages, the Algarve Pro Racing garages in the Pro-Am class, one of the cars is, and the Peugeots. Now, I wasn't going to support the Peugeots until I realised I had a connection with one of the drivers in one of the two cars. I can't remember who it is now. Was it Luc Duval? Or was it... Forgotten. I forget a lot of things these days. Is it early onset of Alzheimer's? I don't know, or is it just the heat? But I'll be watching Peugeot, because I think the car is fascinating, the 9X8. And the new version, where they finally worked out that it might need a rear wing to work properly. The new version was a much better car than the one which they thought they could run without a rear wing and produce all their downforce from the underbody. I'm going to press on, Phil. Alpine now. Lovely little Mick Schumacher. Good on him. Good on him. I hope he wins at Le Mans. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? That'd be nice for him to be able to achieve something in his own right. Although, his dad, I know he raced in a Sauber. Was it the C9 when he was part of the Silver Arrows team long before he came into Formula 1? He raced at Le Mans very, very successfully and was noticed. Well, he was part of the Mercedes Silver Arrows program. They were investing in him, weren't they? So you don't do that unless you think they've got a chance. Right, the TDS Racing, these are all the LMP2 cars at the moment. And, oh, vehicle coming through. Look at this. Sorry, I say look at this. They're pushing one of the Porsches. Which one is this? Number 53, is that? Yeah, the number 5 Penske Porsche. Just been pushed back into the garage. Almost ran over me toes. Don't you love Le Mans? It's one of the things I say about it, that Le Mans is inclusive, not exclusive. It's like, yeah, come, be with us, enjoy. It's not, you're not allowed in here. It's quite the opposite. They want the fan engagement. They always have. They talk about fan engagement, don't they? There's a kind of a modern thing, but I think the ACO have been specialising in that for a very, very long time. Now, from the future, as many French things are, the TGV, Concorde, right? You know what I'm talking about. The RLM Motorsport team. We were invited at one point with the podcast to join RLM Motorsport and help them run a car at Le Mans. We never did it, but we should have. Maybe it's not too late. I say help run a car, you know, wash the tyres and be in the garage and move things around, earn your kudos, but we didn't do it. Right, United Autosports. Now, Zak Brown's team, I wish them well. Ollie Jarvis is in one car, and Pietro Fittipaldi, who I am backing with Renge van der Zander and Jaime Hassum in the number 22 car. I wish them well, because they're a top team, United. They're also running the McLarens in GT3. Now, this is very interesting, because as you know, 2025 is the anniversary of the famous McLaren win in 1995, the last time road car, you might say. This is what it was. One Le Mans outright. Ain't going to happen this year, but they're a crack team and they look the bee's knees in papaya and black. Sato Leung and Sean Galeil, that's Marino Sato. Who's Leung? I can't remember his name, British driver. The Sean Galeil is the number 95 car. And in the number 59 car, trying to find it, where is it written down? Here we go. I don't know who these guys are. Baud, Sosi, and Mr. Cottingham. I met some friends who can't remember his first name. Is it James Cottingham? Last night, who were backing him. And I said, well, I'm going to be following the McLarens this year because of the anniversary of the big race. So, yeah, I wish them well. No sign of Zach Brown in the pit at the moment. Is he here or is he in Canada, which overlaps with this race this week? Where is he going to be? No sign of him. All looks very calm. Minor bits going on the car. There's an engineer putting some oil on a spanner. He's just attaching a piece of carbon fibre. It looks like that's a ventilation of some kind, a through-flow duct, a bit of hosing attached to a very complex bit of glass fibre, is that, or carbon fibre, or even some kind of polythene material that vent channel is using. Right, where's Phil? Where is he? Because I'm outside the first of the many Cadillacs running here, the Whelan Cadillac. Polishing going on here, catching drips from under the car. Oh, that's not very promising, is it? Or is he only catching drips from the liquid that he's spraying on himself? All right, okay. Stand down, everyone. Don't panic. Don't panic. And then the two, if you like, official Cadillacs, run by Jota. Well, WTR, Wayne Taylor Racing running one. Jota are next door with their Cadillac V-Series R, which looks wicked in Jota's and Hertz's gold colours. You know, that stands out. And, of course, these are the cars that got the first two positions, didn't they? Earl Bamber, Jensen Button, and Sebastian Bourdais, number 38 car, they were second. And Hyperbole went to Alex Lynn, Norman Natto, and Will Stevens.
My dad out in Sainsbury's.
Sorry, Mr. Stevens, what did you say? They're second on the grid. I mean, on pole. I mean, that's just outrageous. But I'm not officially backing Cadillac this year, but Jensen is in the number 38 car, so I wish him well. That'd be nice for him, wouldn't it? He's getting on a bit now, but you know, that's something that you can do, endurance, when you get older. Let me tell you, there's a man who swam from South Wales to North Wales when I was 60. I don't think I could have done it when I was 20. You know, I could sprint when I was 20, or I could swim all day because I've learned endurance as an older man. Right, talking about endurance, the two Corvettes, I'm out front of the TF Sport. Beautiful Corvettes in, of course, yellow. Can't wait to hear them barking around the circuit. The AO by TF, LMP2 car. It's very interesting the way that Le Mans do it. They encourage teams who run in GT cars to run in the upper class as well, or if you're running in the upper class, you have to run a car in the GT class as well. Very interesting. That keeps people involved, doesn't it? Keeps teams involved. And that's why you've got a Lexus in the GT and a Toyota in the hypercar. But some of these teams run an LMP2 car as well, so that's why they're garaged next to each other. It's not sort of random higgledy-piggledy. Some teams run cars in all three classes. I think AF Corse, that's a Richard Mille AF Corse, Ferrari 296, LMGT3, 150. Now, which one of these? Yeah, this is Robert Kubica's car, which is the number 83 hypercar. Robert Kubica sharing with Paul Hansen and Yiffy Yee. Isn't that the best name you ever heard? Yiffy Yee. Or if you want to do it in the proper Chinese way, Yee Yiffy. Like Jones, qualifier, Gareth. So this is Jones Gareth on speed, if I was a Chinese podcaster. Kubica must be driving one-handed, effectively. Imagine how hard that is. Because he has only limited use of one arm. The other one's good, but, you know, Le Mans, it's a good tradition with allowing people with disabilities or injuries to be able to compete. Remember, there was a quadriplegic who took part in Le Mans a few years ago. They adapted a car for him to drive. So here we go, in front of the Ferrari garage now, with the number 51 and the number 50 Ferrari AF course, Ferrari 499Ps, which I consider the most beautiful Le Mans car I have seen in many, many, many years. This and the Valkyrie, they're just, this is what they should look like, right? Yeah, the contrast of the red and the green looks good. So, Antonio Fuoco, Michel Molina, and Nielsen, the Danish driver, is in the number 51 car. And that's not my car. My car is the number 50 with Pierguidi Gallardo and what's his name in it? Oh, I've forgot the third name, Mr. Oliver. Antonio Fuoco, isn't it? Yeah. Phew. Who won it the first year that Ferrari came back, and that made me immeasurably happy. Yeah, it was in their anniversary year too. That was a great piece of history, a great moment. Up now from the main garages to the top row of garages, where more GT3 cars, the Ziggo Sport Tempesta. I hope Zog is going to back them, because often when I'm writing to Zog, autocorrect puts Zig in, so I occasionally refer to him as Zig. So Ziggo Sports. Lots of friendly French voices around, smiles. Everybody's wearing a hat because it is blazing hot here. It's going to be a hot, hard race. Now, Iron Lynx, right? They've got three Mercedes-AMG LMG T3 cars. And one of them, which one is it? Berry, Hoddenus, Martin, Gilbert, Rueda, Hamifin, Stoltz, Grove, and... Oh, the other Grove. Oh, who are they? I don't know who they are. I should know. They've got the same flag. Is that a New Zealand flag? Hard to tell. It's very, very small. Well, that's cool. Do you remember the last time that happened? I think the last time that happened was when Nigel Mansell brought his two sons. Were they called, is it Greg and Leo? And they put a team together. Was it Beach Dean? I'm trying to remember. In red, white and blue. And Nigel said, don't worry lads, all take it out, all do the first few laps. And then he had a terrible crash in the first five laps of the race, I think. And that was it. His two sons never even got into the car. So maybe technically that didn't happen then, right? They never actually raced in the race, although they'd qualified and tested and everything. Now outside the Toyota Gazoo Racing pit and garage, and here's the answer to that question: does anyone actually support Toyota at Le Mans? There are plenty of people standing here smiling, taking pictures, studying the car. I mean, they have an incredible record at Le Mans. Fair play, the sport going at its highest level for many years, and have had heartbreaks themselves. I was here when a Toyota broke down on the start-finish straight, one lap from the end, was it? That was just shocking. It's on an episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. I can't remember which year off the top of my head now, but Porsche won, didn't they? They stole the win in the last lap. It was Porsche, wasn't it? Nilsiani? Yeah, I think so. Or was it the year that Hulk won? I can't remember. But you remember the car breaking down at the front, and unless I'm very much mistaken, that's the guy who runs the Toyota Cologne operation. I'm going to listen. If it is, we met him before. I was a guest of Toyota at the British Grand Prix briefly, a very, very long time ago. Very gratefully received when Timo Glock and was it Jarno Trulli, was it, driving for them? Was it Jarno? And I remember sitting down and having dinner with him behind the garages, and he was telling me how he'd been to watch Daytona and the start of the NASCAR Daytona events, and how thrilling he found NASCAR in America, and realised that Formula One had a lot to catch up on. He was right. He had a point. Kessel Racing, one for the Star Wars fans. You need to find a, I don't know, Constitution class racing for me to follow them. I come from the Star Trek side of the garage, you might say. The Bend team, that doesn't translate well from German, does it? The Bend team, WRT. And a BMW M4, LMGT3, you know that car. Now, you know my view on that. I'm not sure it should be allowed to race at Le Mans. It's got too many seats, the coupe. Yeah, the car that it's based on. I think you can allow a 2+2, but not a 4-seater. That's not allowed, right, in my view. Not that I make the rules. But here we are, the BMW team, WRT, BMW M Hybrid V8, their car based on the LMDH rules, the Daytona rules, so it's buy a bit, make it yours. Good luck to them. And then finally, the other BMW team WRT car, number 15 and number 20. Right then, I have familiarised myself briefly with the colours of the car and got an idea of who's going to be doing what at the race. But you'll know how that played out, because by the time you've listened to this, you'll know the results of the race. It's all in the anticipation. It's a beautiful thing. The build-up is as good as the race, and the race is flipping marvellous. And that's it for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, but we've got lots more to do. In fact, in the next episode, we cover the race itself and tell you more about that absolutely fascinating Ineos Grenadier. You can hear all that in the next episode of the podcast, available 7 days from the release of this one. Oh, and while I'm here, don't forget, buy your tickets for our big bash in North Wales in July, 20 years on Speed. Get your tickets now before it sells out. They're available on Eventbrite. Information at garethjones.tv. See you at the bash, and see you for the next episode in a week.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!